What is the greatest cost that you ever personally paid to help someone? I'm not asking what the most expensive benevolent act that you've ever performed is. What I'm asking is, in fact, what's the most costly thing that you've done to reach out to somebody? What's the most humiliating thing that you've ever had to go through in order to reach out and help someone? The most unselfish thing that you have ever done to help somebody? What's the most prolonged and biggest sacrifice that you've ever made in order to reach out and to help someone? We want to consider a topic that's tied to that question this morning. Certainly, welcome to everybody here. We have visitors with us. We are so especially thankful that you are with us this morning. We hope and pray that you will have seen God glorified by having been here this morning. That's our goal. We hope that you like us and get to know us and enjoy being with us, but that's all secondary to what do you see in our God as you leave. And with the songs that we've already sung about the awesome nature of God, it would be difficult to leave this morning and not appreciate God and His glory. And that certainly is our goal. We are thankful that you're here. We hope if you're visiting that you'll be able to come back and be with us at some other time. We would love to have you back whenever that is convenient for you and possible for you. We intend to meet this evening at 5 p.m. for Bible classes and a period of worship, and also intend on meeting on Wednesday night. And those are our typical times, meeting on Wednesday night at 7 p.m. We'd love to have you back at any or all of those occasions if you can. I wanted to think with you for just a moment about that question that we just asked and how it is that we might think in terms of sacrifice. That's always been one of the things that is a little more difficult for me, I think, to understand than it was, say, for my grandparents or great-grandparents. There were many things that they had to do and many experiences that they had and many sacrifices that they had to make that people of my generation, as a general rule in this country at least, have not had to do, have sacrifices that we've not had to make. I've always lived in this country or in similar circumstances. I was born outside of this country, but in a military family, so still very much blessed with the things that would have been given to me in this country as well. And since early childhood, have lived in this country and have only experienced the abundance that exists in this country. I know others in other parts of the world have certainly experienced other things, but and so some of us, some of you may have been in those circumstances as well because of your travels or where you've lived. But I just want you to think with me for a minute about what would be required of you and me to give up what we might call our right now lifestyle. In other words, if you were to leave the things that you had now, to have to sacrifice all of those things, to be put into a place that would not even have those things available to you, to be put maybe into some region of the world where there was only that which was extremely primitive still around. Maybe that would set you back literally centuries in your existence, where you would now have no electricity, which means not only would you not have lights that we have, but that also means all your games, video games, are gone. All your televisions are gone. All your radios are gone. Everything else that runs off of electricity, everything that you cook with presently, if you didn't have electricity, and if you're cooking off of gas or something, then just imagine you have no natural gas either. And so all of those conveniences are gone. You no longer have a car and probably no longer have any mode of transportation other than your own 2 feet. You no longer have anything as convenient as plumbing, either indoor or outdoor plumbing. You find yourself having to do all of your work by physical labor with with very primitive tools. Your only source of water for drinking and for washing your clothes and for taking care of anything else that you may need. All of that water comes from either a stream that may be nearby that you have to carry back to wherever you are, or maybe if you're not quite as well off as that, it may be in an area where the water drains off through and you have to get your water from that would be a drainage type of area. There's no medical facilities like we might think of now, so that when you're sick, there's no drugstore that you can go to. There's no real medicines that you can even have. None of those conveniences that we would presently have. There's no such thing as discretionary money. Everything you do and all the work, whether it's actual money you're receiving for that or you're bartering in some kind of trade, everything you do is needed just to be able to put food on your table for you and your family, and some kind of clothing on your back, some kind of roof over your head. There's probably no real privacy in your life, no real freedoms like we think about freedom today. Your life expectancy is probably in the neighborhood of 40 to 50 years. If you should make 50 years, then you would be considered one of the old people. There are no creature comforts like we have now. You probably find yourself sleeping on some kind of mat on the floor rather than having furniture like we think about that is soft and warmth that is in your house that like we might have. The only power that you even have in this realm you find yourself in is what knowledge you have, because you've taken your present knowledge back with you, which only makes it more difficult, does it not? To know all of the things that you've left behind, all of the things that you used to have, all of the things that man is capable of having. Think how difficult that would be. And I would tell you, if you can put yourself in that scenario, I how long could you stay there? Could you do that for a week? Could you do it for a month, 6 months, for a year? Could you do that for an entire lifetime? How difficult would that be to do? And I would tell you that pales in comparison to what our Lord did for us. How can you even touch on what it meant for Jesus to leave heaven and the presence of His Father to come down to earth with the knowledge that He had in heaven, knowing what it was that He left behind? And not only having that knowledge, the power that He had of that knowledge is the very thing that created fear in those that were around Him. So now, because of what you know, imagine all those around you, in fact, start to shun you because of your being different from them in that respect. Jesus, having left behind that area where there are no physical needs at all, there's no such thing as hunger or thirst or any kind of discomfort or pain or fear or weakness or sickness or weariness. Nobody ever gets tired. There's no grief. There's no death. There's no sorrow. What does that mean to leave every bit of that behind? I think there's a question in there for us in this regard. And this is the lesson, at least as I have it for this morning. It's entitled, "How Low Will You Go?" In other words, will we stoop like Jesus stooped? I love that word, stooping. In other words, the idea of bending down, maybe getting down on a knee so that you can talk to somebody. Have you ever done that? So that you can stoop to talk to a child? Rather than stand above them and tower, you stoop down. So, you know what I want to do? I want to come down to where you are. That's what you're telling the child, isn't it? I want to come down to your level. I want to talk to you. I want to look at six people, all quickly. Six people. A couple of the passages we'll turn to, some we'll just remember together. But I want you to think about these six people. Three men, three women, that I think represent in the life of Jesus how low he was willing to stoop and what there is for us in that particular lesson. I would start you with Matthew, one of his disciples. Matthew, who was a tax collector, and Jesus stopping by the very table where Matthew's working to collect taxes from people. We just think we have issues with the IRS. We don't begin to have tax issues like they had tax issues. Imagine if this is the way the IRS was run. The government said, we want people who are wealthy enough to buy the right to collect taxes. That's where it starts. So these people get to now buy from your government the right to collect taxes from you. And here's how they make their profit. They make their profit because the government says, I need this much from these people, and whatever you collect above that is yours to keep. So you just think the IRS has control and power now. Imagine if the agents had a right to collect from you what they wanted to collect, as long as they collected at least what the government wanted, and anything they got beyond that, whether honestly or dishonestly, didn't even matter to the Roman government, they could collect from you and take. And then if they hired additional people to help them collect those taxes, then those people were paid by taking beyond whatever the tax collector had assessed. It's no wonder they were hated. They were despised. They were considered across the board as thieves. You know, we talk about our government that way sometimes and about the IRS, but I would have to tell you, as much as we don't like paying taxes, I'm thinking the majority of the people that work for that particular branch of our government don't have as their goal to steal my money. I don't believe that. I may not agree with their methods. I may not agree with their taxes, but that they're not basically across the board a group of dishonest people who are only interested in pilfering and stealing from me. But that's what the tax collectors were. And here's the God of heaven who has left all of heaven. And one of the first place he stops is at a table that's got one of the most despised men of his entire generation. He says, I want you to come with me. I've got something for you. And I would tell you, doubly bad when you've got somebody like Matthew, because not only is he in fact considered a thief because he's a tax collector and despised because he's a tax collector, the Jews would have considered him a traitor. On top of that, he's turned against our very nation, working for the very government that is oppressing us and taking these taxes from us. Second man shows up in Matthew chapter 8. I want you to turn there with me if you would. Matthew chapter 8. Starting in verse 1. When he had come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. And behold, a leper came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. And then Jesus put out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said to him, see that you tell no one, but go your way and show yourself to the priest and offer the gift that Moses commanded as a testimony to them. I just want you to picture, he's no longer talking to the thief, to the tax collector, to the dreg of society from that standpoint. Now he's talking to a man that was scary to everybody around him. Don't know if you've ever seen leprosy, a disease that we know has been mostly eradicated in our lifetime, in our country. It doesn't really exist. It's called Hansen's disease now instead of leprosy, but same kind of thing. What happens with leprosy is that the nerves literally start to die wherever the disease affects. That's what causes, if you've ever seen it, they get very white and ashen, their skin, because the nerves literally die. Limbs will break. And sometimes even come off. You imagine you just lose a finger because you can't sense any pain because the nerve is dead. And so even if the body parts all stay together, these people generally end up pretty grossly deformed. Imagine that you could break your fingers multiple times, or your hand or your arm, and because there is no pain, you don't realize that, and so it heals in a fashion that it's not intended to heal, and you end up with gross deformities because of that. That's what these people looked like many times when it ran its full course. So much so that they were put off into areas of their own. If you were, in fact, under the Jewish law and you were a leper, you weren't allowed to touch anyone. Nobody was allowed to touch you without also becoming unclean. You didn't even touch the things that a leper touched. Just imagine how that makes you feel. That I walk over here and I pick up this book, and because of who I am, you won't even touch the book. Not only will you not touch me, you won't even touch the book. And if I see you coming, it's my responsibility to yell out to you, stop, don't come any closer. I'm an outcast. I'm a leper. Just imagine what that life is like. And this is the one that comes up to Jesus, and Jesus reaches out and touches this man. When's the last time this man was touched by somebody who was not a leper? You ever wonder that? Absolutely outcast by society, a disease that scared people to death. I didn't want to even be near the person because of the disease that they had. And Jesus was willing to touch him and to heal him. The third man shows up in Matthew chapter 27 as well as Luke chapter 23. A couple of different accounts of the same incident, one with more detail than the other. But what Matthew chapter 27 tells us in verse 44 is that this man was one of two that was hanging on a cross on either side of Jesus. Now we've got a man that's identified specifically as a thief. This is a man who is a criminal. He is a lawbreaker, and he's hanging on a cross because he is a lawbreaker. And he is not only accused of that, he is guilty of that by his own admission. He's going to say, later in Luke's account, he says, we are being crucified because we deserve it. Jesus does not. So he acknowledges, in fact, who he is as a criminal. But he started off both, it says, hurling insults at Jesus. That's where this man started this day. Hanging on a cross, one on either side of Jesus, both men saying insulting things to Jesus. But at some point, something Jesus said or something that he did or what this man saw in the happenings of that day changed his way of thinking. In Luke chapter 23, he indicates that, because as the one in fact says to Jesus, are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us. The other man stopped him. He rebuked him and he said, look, you shouldn't say that. He's innocent in hanging here. We're not. Don't treat him like he's one of us. And instead he looked at Jesus and says, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. What an incredible request. Jesus, who's already got the shame of hanging on the cross, between two thieves who are rightfully there, looks at the one and says, I'm taking you home with me. Today. Today you will be with me in paradise. All the people around, I assure you, are jeering this man that's on the cross. They don't care that he's up there. They get sport out of knowing that he's up there. Justice is being done. The criminal is being put to death. And Jesus says, come home with me this very day. Three men. Three different areas of life. Three different problems. Three different reasons that they were despised by those that were around them. I want you to think with me also about three women. The first, Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8, starting in verse 43. It says, there was a woman having a flow of blood for 12 years. Who had spent all her livelihood on physicians and could not be healed by any. Here's a woman who now has nothing. She spent every bit of her money trying to get well. They couldn't help her. So now she is poor and still sick the same way that she was sick. And she's had this flow of blood for some 12 years. Everybody around her knew her. She, like the leper, you couldn't have contact with under the Jewish law. That would have made you unclean. And here's a woman whose faith caused her to say, you know what, I know if I can just fight through the crowd, if I can just get to him, and if I can just touch the hem of his garment, that's all I want to do. That's how much I believe. She did. She fought through that crowd. And she reached out and she touched his garment. And as she did, Jesus felt power leave him, and he turned around and he said, "Who touched me?" And she was terrified. But in that fear, she still explained herself. And she said she touched him and explained why. And Jesus looks at her and says, "Your faith has made you well. Go in peace." Who else around that woman was going to reach out to her? Who else was providing for her what she needed? Ridden by disease, unclean by the law, absolutely without a cent to her name. And Jesus said, "I'll heal you. I'll take care of you." Secondly, in Luke chapter 7, starting in about verse 36 all the way down through verse 50, that's a story that many of you may remember. Jesus is going into the house of a Pharisee. And in the house of that Pharisee, there's a woman there that comes and starts washing his feet with her tears and with her hair, wiping them off. And those that are around are snickering, and they just don't believe that this is happening. And Simon, in that righteousness or self-righteousness that he has as the Pharisee, sitting in his home thinking, if this man had any idea who it was that was touching him, he would stop this in a heartbeat. Jesus said, "Not true." And so he talked to Simon. To prove, I think, a couple of things. One, to prove that he did know who was touching him. This woman was probably a prostitute. When it calls her a sinner, that is most likely the reference to who she was. So now you've got one who's, in fact, out there selling her body to anybody who's willing to pay her for that. And she comes into the house, and how would most of the people react the same way that the Pharisee did? Most would say, you know what, I don't even want her here. She wasn't an invited guest, I'm sure. She's not invited. We don't even want her here. Get out of our house. This isn't for people like you. And she's wiping the feet of Jesus. Jesus knew who she was. And he knew that what she was doing was superior to what they were doing. He knew there was more than just the sin that she was committing. And so he forgives this woman and tells her as well to go in peace. The third woman, Jesus meets her at a well in John chapter 4. He's having a conversation with this woman that I would tell you there's several things that just absolutely weren't done. I want you to imagine the worst case scenario of race relations or of nationality relations, whatever you may think of. That if there was somebody that it was just absolutely anathema for you to ever actually talk to, you know, because people are raised that way. Some people are raised, you do not talk or associate with this type of person, or a person from here, or a person of this color, whatever it may be. Some people are raised that way, and the Jews as a whole were raised that way. Samaritan, the dogs of society. You don't ever talk to one of these dogs. Imagine as a child, that's the way you're brought up. These people are filth. These people are evil. These people are our enemies. Don't ever talk to them. Generation after generation after generation being raised told that. This Samaritan woman comes to the well, and Jesus said, "I'm thirsty. You mind getting some water for me?" She's amazed. We know she's amazed because she says, How is it that you, being a Jew, are even talking to me?" She knew what the deal was. She knew Jews didn't talk to Samaritans. She said, "How is it you're a Jew and you're even talking to me?" And Jesus said, "You know what? I'm asking you for water, but I've got something to give you that's even more important than that. I'll give you living water, eternal life," he was telling her. I want to help you. Not only am I willing to speak to you, I want nothing more than to be able to give you exactly what you need." And so he's willing to help this Samaritan woman. And I'll tell you, this woman's remarkable. She's one of the few in Scripture that recognizes and voices that this is the Christ. She sees, surely this is, in fact, the Christ. How low was Jesus willing to stoop? See, how many passages could you find? It's not difficult to find passages. It's difficult to figure out of all the people he dealt with, which ones to choose. Because he was constantly stooping to help others. I want to close with a passage in Matthew chapter 9. Because how low are you willing to stoop, Jesus? The Pharisees said he stooped too low. Should never have stooped that low. Should never have dealt with people the way he did. They said, tax collectors and sinners, to meet with these people, to eat with these people, to talk too low. You got no business, Jesus, stooping that low to talk to these people. Jesus will answer that question himself. Matthew chapter 9. I want you to read with me starting in verse 9. "And Jesus passed on from there and saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax office, and he said to him, 'Follow me.' So he arose and followed him." So we're right back full circle to where we started. "And it happened as Jesus sat at the table in the house that, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to his disciples, 'Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?'" What is he thinking? Now they asked the disciples. Jesus said, "Let me tell you exactly what I'm thinking." Jesus heard that, he said to them, and he gives them three answers. He said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick." Jesus said, in fact, sick people need help. That's why I'm helping them, because they're sick. Secondly, he says, "Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice." Jesus said, "You need to understand something. Hosea the prophet, back in chapter 6, verse 6, is the one where this quote comes from, says, God is looking for compassion. And he said, it is more important that I care first about these people. No act of worship takes precedence over a heart of mercy and compassion." He didn't say he doesn't desire sacrifice. He does. But he says, go and learn what this means. What is primary? Primary is that you care, and I care about these people. That's why I stoop, because I care. And then thirdly, he says, "For I didn't come to call the righteous, but sinners." He said, this is who I came for. The sick, the hurting, the sinners. That's exactly the nature of what Paul said when he said that Jesus forgave him. He said, who was in fact a blasphemer, this aggressively violent man, insolent, who was standing against God himself, and Jesus forgave him. Paul said that, and Paul becomes what biblically at least is for us the greatest cross-cultural teacher of the gospel that we ever read about. Went everywhere to everyone. And so the question I think that God has for me, and I think that God has for each of us, is this. What are we all about? The community of Christians that exist in the form of God's church at Nashua. What What are we all about? Is our commitment the same as God's commitment, the same as Jesus' commitment? And how do we know that? By answering this question. What opportunity is there here for those who are thieves, and those who are diseased, and those who are social outcasts, and those who are prostitutes, and those who are sinners, and those who are degraded and despised by the world, who would come to Jesus? What opportunity is there? And then secondly, and equally important, who's going to provide them the opportunity to make the turn? That's his question, I think, for me. And for all of us. He says, here's how low I was willing to stoop. Are you willing to stoop? The gospel is absolutely, as we sing sometimes, the gospel is for all. We need to make sure that, as we talked about in our Bible class this morning, God says, we're not of the world. We don't act like them. We're not doing the things that the world as a whole is doing, but we're in the world. And we need to be in the world because we are sanctified, we talked about this morning. That means set apart from the world, but set apart for the world, so that we can take the light back to them. Keep an attitude of being willing to stoop. Jesus stooped for us. May we always be willing to stoop for others. If you're not a Christian, we hope you'll take care of that this very morning, that you'll make yourself right with God. If you know how to do that, please let us know that you want to do that and take care of that. If you want to be baptized into Christ, if you understand that's what He teaches based on your belief. If not, talk to us. We'd love to open up His Word, show you what He teaches, so that you can respond to Him in the dedication that He looks for. For those of us that are Christians, or at least for me, I can tell you, boy, is it easy to get accustomed to being at a certain level of life, and sometimes because of that, not stooping to help those who are not there. May we always be willing to stoop. If we can help you today, let us know as we stand and sing.